It's live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. It is Holy Week. It's Passover. It's all kinds of fun stuff. Glad you could join me this today. Whew, I need to let the caffeine kind of sink into my brain cells a little bit. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. Hey, have you checked out my website lately? You should. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. Tweeting during the show, follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at GLINK, where I'm already answering questions and responding to people who want to talk about a question that ran in the column this week, syndicated column, on whether you can actually set up an LLC and sell your home to yourself. Kind of an interesting concept. Short answer, no. Some might call that fraud, but anyway. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines now. Fred is going to release them to the wild, I'm sure, 404-872-0750. In the meantime, I want to start by talking about what ground zero really means. And I want to talk about this in the context of what we've been talking about, which is rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours, your house, your financial life, your children and family's financial life. And my idea that this kind of rebuilding starts at the very micro level, right, with you and what you personally are doing, and then it spreads to your spouse or partner, your children, your parents, your siblings, your family, your friends, your neighborhood, the community at large, and then finally we get this country on a roll. And I do believe very strongly that just a little push in the right direction is going to have tremendous results. And so one part of that, the very first, most important part of rebuilding America and rebuilding your home, is this idea that you have to get to ground zero and take your pain all at once. And there are so many people for whom this getting to ground zero idea is confusing. I know it's confusing because I'm seeing your emails and your tweets, and you know, you're like, is this just another bunch of jargon? And anybody who's listened to this show for any period of time knows that the last thing I'm about is jargon. In fact, in 1993, when I was writing my first book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, I declared a jargon-free zone. And I put up a sign above my desk that said, there shall be no jargon in this book. Seriously, because my feeling is that in the financial world, the real estate and financial world, if someone is going to snow you, they're going to snow you with jargon, right? They're going to try to confuse you. And they're going to confuse you, try to confuse you with verbiage that's meaningless, which is what jargon really is, right? It's acronyms and it's big fancy words. And, you know, really, if you can't explain a concept to a 10-year-old and have them repeat it back to you, you don't really understand it. And so people, in my mind, will hide behind jargon rather than getting to the heart of what matters, than speaking clearly and cleanly. And they'll just do jargon. So I'm all about a jargon-free zone, and ground zero is anything but jargon. Ground zero is stripping everything away, and it's something that I first thought about in terms of personal finance. So if you read one of my early books that was published in, like, the late 90s. I always hate to say those dates because it makes me feel so old. But if you think about that book, 100 Questions You Should Ask About Your Personal Finances, in it, I talk about stripping away everything and getting back to ground zero with your money. Because instead of trying to pare back on expenses, which a lot of people find hard to do, right? It's like dieting around the edges. So you're just going to have three bites of the cake. Isn't it just easier not to have the cake? I was out for dinner last night with my brother-in-law for his birthday, and this dessert came around. It was called a chocolate cigar, and truly was cookie wrapped in a tube, chocolate with a little, you know, I objected to the dessert on all sorts of levels, but everybody else went around the table and took a bite. And I thought to myself, you know, I just don't even want a bite. I don't want one bite of this. I'm just not going to have any. And it would have been easy if I was on a diet to just say, well, I'm just going to have one bite. But the truth is that one bite is the beginning for so many people of the downfall. Right? So if you've ever been on a diet, you know it's really hard to take just one bite. Or what was that French diet? Just three bites. And, you know, everybody's got a gimmick. Everybody's got jargon. Everybody's got ways to confuse you above and beyond what's really going to work. And so I have always felt that you could just get all the way back to ground zero. Strip everything out that you don't absolutely have to spend. What do you have to spend in your life? You have to spend money for shelter, unless you're going to live in your car, right? So you got to live someplace. You've got to put food on the table. You've got to have power, right? And you've got to have some medical help when you need it. Food, shelter, clothing, a little bit, nothing fancy. All the rest. And everything else falls away because it's really easy when you're focusing on ground zero. What is the least amount that you need to get through the day? So I've been talking about ground zero for years, years and years and years, because I found in my own life and all of this stuff, you know, if you are new to the show, maybe you don't know. I practice what I preach, right? I'm a little bit like Clark that way. In fact, Clark and I, for all these years that I filled in for him, people would say, oh, you and Clark are so much alike. And I would say, well, actually, it's my husband and Clark who are very much alike. But the idea that you can strip everything else away makes it an easy choice. And then you add back, right? What is the least amount that you need to live? That's ground zero. It's recognizing that almost everything else is superfluous to the point at hand, which is where do you need to get to understand where you need to go. Looking in the mirror, where do you need to get to? So that you know how far you need to go. Ground zero is a really interesting concept. And the corollary to ground zero is take the pain now. Because if you're going to cut everything else away, it isn't going to be easy. You just get used to a different level. So years ago, when I got fired from my very first job that I ever held, and I decided I was going to run my own life and be a freelance writer because I was making almost nothing, and I thought I could make almost nothing doing almost anything. Sam was working. We had just gotten married, and Sam was bought a apartment, right? So Sam was working for a law firm and decided to leave, decided he also wanted to have his own practice. And the two of us, now today it's pretty common to have two self-employed people, but 20-odd years ago, not so common. Not common at all. And the way that we looked at it was we would rather trade time together for stuff, right? We'd rather take the pain now, strip away all the trappings of stuff we didn't really need, focus on what was really important, what we really need to spend money on, and bank the rest. And we made that decision when we were in our 20s, and the world we thought was changing forever. And we were right. We were just like 15 years early. But for us, this is what made sense. And so we stripped away everything, the dinners out, theater, you know, entertainment that was expensive. We focused on the cheap. This is how we taught ourselves what ground zero looks like. And we lived that way for a really long time. And, you know, it's become such habit forming. It was so habit forming for us that even when we didn't need to do it anymore, we always did it. And we're still really thoughtful about how we spend every dollar. And some of our people make so much fun of us. And we kind of have the last laugh, right? Because we stripped away everything. We went to ground zero. We took all the pain. And then we started banking the rest. And we rebuilt our house one brick at a time. And through like 12 or 13 books, you guys have lived that with me. Through the website, through this radio show for the last, I don't know, 15 years I've been on the air here at WSB or more. I've lost count. There is so much rebuilding that you can do. There are still things that I could rebuild in my life, but we have options. And we have options because we went to ground zero and we started building, rebuilding our lives. From what was expected, from the societal pressure, to what felt clean and honest to us. And that's really where we are, right? It's spring, it's renewal, it's Holy Week, it's Passover. It's all about rebuilding and starting new. And I bring this message to you, not in a religious sort of sense, right? I think everybody is adult enough to take their own religious steps. But this idea of spring and renewal, and that I really truly feel when I read some of the stuff in the paper this week, and I'm going to share that with you in just a little bit, about where we're going, like, for example, in the mortgage market, or credit, or Congress, debt, deficit, right? All these really huge issues that we're dealing with as a country, day in and day out, as we try to find our way back. I kind of think Washington is eating away at the edge. It's about, they're trying to diet three bites at a time. And it's not working. It's not working, and we as a country need to take our medicine. We have to understand this idea of getting back to ground zero and that there will be a huge amount of pain that's associated with that. And then we can rebuild going forward. But we have to be thoughtful, and this is where it comes on the other side, right? So I'm all about living within your means, but there are times at which that's just a very dangerous thing because you can't let a third of the country go hungry because you've decided you want to live within your means. So where we're going to cut our food stamps. I just don't think that's thoughtful. And so we have to be thoughtful. I keep hoping we're electing leaders who are being thoughtful and not strident on both sides of the aisle. And like you, I've been very disappointed because we still, although the economy is starting to move a little bit, Europe is in its sixth quarter of recession. And the numbers look really bad. So we'll talk about this more in just a little bit. We're going to take a short break. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. This is News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750. It's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. Hey, Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks.
So I looked at your topic today and I had to laugh because if I'm a seller, I could think of a whole bunch of things that would make me mad these days when buyers come to the table with an offer. But I'm dying to hear your list. So what are the top few things that make buyers, sellers really mad?
Well, first off, let me start with, I only know this because we've closed over 12,000 properties in the last 10 years. Of course, we've looked at many offers to get to that 12,000 closed. But, you know, there's a couple things that we have taught our buyers to reframe in their head before they start going out to look at properties. And the first thing that really makes people mad is when you suggest that their house is dirty and it needs to be professionally cleaned.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Okay, it would be so much better just to get a certain amount off the sales price or ask for a certain type of allowance or, you know, but when you say house to be professionally cleaned and the person says, well, my wife's been a stay-at-home mom for 28 years, you know, they're not going to be too happy with that. And so you got to realize that for a lot of these sellers, this is an emotional shift of memories, and they want to believe that the buyer loves the house as much as they do.
Right.
All right. The second thing would be closing costs without any explanation, or closing costs that the seller believes is way too high. I think pre-qual letters should include closing costs and talk about what kind of loan and what kind of closing costs are applicable inside that loan, because that would really help. The number one question we're asked is, what's the common amount of money that people should be asking for closing costs? You know, and that really shouldn't come from the seller having to wonder. The buyer's agent should have gone ahead and filled that up,
Do it ahead of time.
Right, personal items. You know, the buyer asked for a $3,000 refrigerator that they think's worth $700, and the seller just bought it last week, and it was $3,200. You know, those kind of misunderstandings create no counteroffer.
You know, it's interesting. I think that what buyers sometimes fail to understand is that it's really about everybody walking away with a win. I do believe it's still possible to have a transaction where everybody walks away feeling good.
Yes, you should.
And if you can, it's such a much better experience for everybody.
Right. You should do that.
You should. Will people? Maybe not.
Well,
if they listen to you, they will.
We tell buyers to write a clean offer, and what that means is we're going after the price, and all the rest of the stuff's going to be negotiated later. So that's how we approach it.
All right. Rhonda Duffy of Duffy Realty of Atlanta. I expect that you've got all this on your blog.
RhondaDuffy.com.
All right. Check it out, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
We'll see you next week.
Okay. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. How can I help you today, and how can you help your community? 404-872-0750. Follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Steve joins us on the line from Canton. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to be hoping to retire here pretty soon. I have some money in a pension, and I do have a little bit of property in Tennessee, and I have a house there, a little small house. And I was listening to you talk a little while ago about how you and your husband downsize, and I just love that. So I was going to ask you your suggestion for what I should do about rolling my pension over into an IRA. Should I go with the Vanguard? And also, would I be able to get a check monthly just from the interest with no penalty?
So let's back up a little bit. First of all, how old are you?
62.
Okay. And have you taken Social Security yet?
No. When I talked to them, it was, if I wait till I was 65, I would draw a little more, but...
Absolutely.
A couple hundred more dollars a month.
That might be something I'll do. When are you hoping to retire?
Anytime from now until then.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow over the next 3 years.
Tomorrow would be beautiful.
have you stepped back, Steve, to look at the big picture here? Because you tell me you've got some money that you're going to get for a pension, and you've got, sounds like a 401k that you're going to roll over, or maybe that's the pension. I'm a little confused there. You've got some property. What's the big plan for the next 20 years of your life?
To be at that property, the expenses are incredibly cheap. I'm going to have to probably put a little bit of money into the house to fix it up just a little bit. But the house is in good shape. But
you're just going to hang out? You're going to go hunting, fishing? You're going to sit on your porch and smoke a cigarette? What are you thinking?
I quit smoking a few years ago. I'm happy to say that.
All right. That's a good savings. I like that.
I'm going to continue to work part-time because I just have to get out of the house. I'll probably do something just small, make a little income. It won't be that much. But I will draw a pension, and my wife's drawing a pension.
Okay.
And
what I'm trying to get at, Steve, is the way we want to live in retirement, when you rebuild your house, right, you're at an inflection point. You want to retire. It sounds like your wife maybe is already retired, or she can.
Yes, she's already gone.
She's retired. She's got a pension. You've got a pension. You've got property. There's money in the bank. There will be Social Security for both of you. It sounds like there's going to be enough as is.
You,
I'm not sure you've actually done the math. You know, which is...
I did the math, and the way it looks like we're going to be okay. Because next year I won't have any car payment or anything as of next year.
But eventually you're going to have a car payment again, right? You're going to live
probably
20, 25 years in retirement. You and your wife will not keep your car for 25 years. Won't happen. What I want you to do is try it and envision how you're going to be feeling your way through this, right? What is it? You know, I know you said you got to get out of the house, work a little bit. Your wife's got to work. You're going to be in the mountains of Tennessee. It sounds really lovely, actually.
Beautiful.
It doesn't sound like the finances are going to be an issue, except that I need to understand, and you need to understand, what is going to change and what is the money that you've thought about, that you've set aside, that you've planned for when something doesn't go as planned, which is to say there's, you know, expenses above and beyond Medicare, right? So what are you going to do for the next 3 years for medical insurance before you qualify for Medicare if you retire from your job? How will that money affect what you're doing, and how will you make it all work? Those numbers are the numbers I want you to focus on. Putting money from the pension into the IRA, Vanguard, diversified, half in bonds, half in stocks, that's easy.
Okay.
The question for you is, how do you plan to live your life? How do you plan to get through the next 3 years? How do you plan to cover these big chunk of expenses where for you and your wife, it could be $200,000 above and beyond Medicare over the next 20, 25 years? How are you going to fund that?
So Medicare starts at 65, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so I need to wait a couple more years. Okay, I see.
Right, and planning for that and understanding how those medical expenses will affect you, where you're going to go to get your medical care up in the mountains of Tennessee, right? I'm sure there's doctors around there, but all that stuff needs to be part of the big plan so that you can take care of yourself and you can take care of your wife and she can do the same for you.
Correct. I got you. So I'd probably be better off to wait because, you're right. I should probably just wait a couple more years. Plus, can I draw something off of anything that I do in Vanguard? Can I draw a little bit off of the interest without any kind of penalty?
Yes, because you're over the age of 59 and a half. So once you move money, let's say you had a past job and a 401k that's just sitting there, like a current job, you probably can't do that. You have to wait till you retire or you leave it. But if you had a past job, you could roll that money into an IRA, and you could take money off the top. You still owe taxes on it, but you wouldn't owe a penalty on it anymore. You're too old for that. And then when you hit 70 and a half is when you have to make a required minimum distribution, and you're ways away from that.
Well, this is with Fidelity, so they have a pretty good reputation, I think.
Fidelity is just fine. Fidelity, Vanguard, TIAA, Kraft, Charles Schwab. The companies are all good and solid, and I like them all. It's what you decide to put your money in, because these companies are just holding tanks, right? It's a place that you put your money. Then you have to make the investment decision based on how much risk you can stomach.
Correct. Okay.
But I don't have a problem if you choose Charles Schwab or Fidelity or Vanguard or TIA, crap. There's a couple of others that are, you know, these are massive financial services companies. They're strong. They're not going anywhere.
Well,
they're
Fidelity's
fine.
Holding it currently.
Okay, Fidelity's fine.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've been a lot of help.
Well, I'm so glad to hear it. Good luck to you and your wife, and continued good health. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Janice joins us on the line. Hi, Janice.
Hi.
What's going on in your world?
Well, I was trying to refinance my house, and the house is extremely upside down.
Right.
And I've gone to, I have Jason City, and no one will refinance my house.
Why not?
Because they said it is more upside down, and they won't do it.
Have you, are you, do you qualify for the Home Affordable Refinance Program, HARP?
I asked them about that, and they just said no. And I'm like, why? All I want to do is just get a lower rate for the home.
Do you have an FHA loan?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes. I don't have a paperwork.
You don't sound like you're sure. Have you looked at your mortgage and at the top it says FHA?
Yes, but it's been a while, so I don't have it with me right now, so I can't look at it right now because I'm in a different space.
Different space? What do you mean exactly?
I'm
in the living room and that's in the office?
No, like I'm in Atlanta and then that information is like in Florida.
Why?
Because I'm visiting in Atlanta.
Oh. Okay. You don't live in Atlanta. You live in Florida.
Right.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. All right. So the first thing is if you truly have an FHA loan backed by the Federal Housing Administration,
mm-hmm.
what you would qualify for is an FHA streamline refinance, not a HARP loan. Right? HARP is for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans.
Okay,
but if you truly have an FHA loan, you can get something called an FHA streamline refinance, where you basically call your lender, and without pulling an appraised value, and without looking at your credit, without checking your work history, and without looking at any documents whatsoever, you pay a couple hundred bucks, and they lower your interest rate down to somewhere maybe at 4.5%. What is your interest rate right now?
8.9. I can't remember.
Okay, that is really high. When did you
exactly.
get your mortgage? Yeah, I understand, but when did you get your mortgage? Because that's higher than interest rates have been for FHA loans for a really long time.
I purchased my home in 2006. And right after I purchased my home, that's when the whole thing went bust. Whole mortgage and everything started going crazy.
So how much did you put down on the mortgage?
I think I may have put like $5,000 when I first purchased the home. I'm not for sure.
Uh-huh. And $5,000 was what percentage of the property? How much did your house cost?
The house was like $220,000.
Okay. So I'm just going to say this, Janice. I'm not sure you have an FHA loan.
Oh, you know? Well,
no.
I don't have Fannie Mae and don't have Freddie Mac.
So
I don't have those two.
Okay, well, if you don't have Fannie and Freddie, then for sure you don't qualify for HARP. If you have an FHA loan, you may be able to get a streamline refinance. But I don't know why your interest rate would be so high from 2006. And the only way I can imagine it's that high is that you really don't have an FHA loan.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get back to your house,
mm-hmm.
I want you to look at your paperwork.
Right.
And figure out exactly how much what loan you have and how much you owe. And then maybe if you really truly have an FHA loan, you can call the lender and say, I want an FHA streamline refinance.
Okay.
And you can go to the HUD website, Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD.gov. And look up FHA Streamline Refinance, and it will tell you exactly what you need to know about that. And then you go to your lender and say, this is what I want. I should be paying you a couple of hundred bucks, and I want my interest rate lowered. And that's how you do it. But if you don't have an FHA loan, and you don't have Fannie and Freddie, you won't qualify for a refinance anywhere. And that is just the sad news that I have for you. And then you're going to have to figure out what next steps you're going to take, because if you can't afford your mortgage and you don't qualify for help, your only option may be to walk away. And that's a really hard truth that you may have to face. So when you get home, Go do that, and you can still call. You know, the phones work from Florida. You can call next Sunday, and we can talk about it. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's the phone numbers. Their lines are still open. I'm Elise Klink. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB.
I don't know.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Or if you want me to pay for the call, I will. 1-800-WSB-TALK. It's 55 minutes past the hour. Malik joins us on the line. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Malik.
Malik, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's an honor to talk to you, Elise.
Well, thank you. How can I help you today?
I'm trying to purchase a house. It's a hard home. And there is a plumbing problem.
Right.
So there's a water leak, and utility company won't turn the utilities on because there's a leak. And appraiser won't appraise. So I cannot close the file, and it starts, it's like costing me $25 a day.
What's costing you money if you haven't, have you closed on this house?
Yes.
Yes, you closed on it?
No, I haven't closed on it.
You haven't closed on it, so what's costing you money?
I mean, starting the first, my closing date was on the first.
Okay, but you can't close on the property until they fix these problems. So
right.
Are they going to fix the problems? FHA has to have it fixed. Somebody has to get it fixed.
Right.
Or and FHA nobody won't fund it, and they won't allow you to close on it.
Right. And everybody's just finger-pointing at each other. The lender is saying its agent should do it. Agent is saying, no, HUD should do it. HUD is like, we already told you there was a problem. So they're just making me run around, and I'm not authorized to go and fix it, so I just don't know what to do.
This is just where one of the frustrating things about buying a HUD home. So you may not be authorized to fix it.
Uh-huh.
HUD is authorized to fix it, but they probably won't.
Right.
And the house will just fall into disrepair. So,
okay.
And you know, eventually somebody will buy it at even less money than you. So the real question is, how do you fix the problem? How do you get the agent to get it fixed? So if the agent is authorized to get it fixed, how do you get how do you do all the work for the agent and then have the agent do it for you?
So you're saying the agent is authorized to do it?
I'm not sure who's going to be authorized to do it. But if the agent says to you, I'm authorized, but I don't want to do the work, then you could step in and say, I'll do all the work in your name, and you just authorize it. If you really want this house, because otherwise you're going to have to walk away from the property. The other thing is get pushing the lender to do it and going above the person who the lender is talking to, or hiring an attorney to try and get the lender to do something. But ultimately, it's a HUD house, and this is one of the great frustrations in dealing with HUD, is a house that's fallen into disrepair, and nobody will actually get it fixed. So what I'm saying to you is, if you can't get the agent to move on it, you may end up walking away from this house, and you just have to make other plans. 58 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Be back in a flash with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 12:07 here on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. Thanks for joining me today, where we're rebuilding America one house at a time, and we're starting with yours. Our number, 1-800-WSB-TALK, 404-872-0750, online all the time, thinkglink.com. And when you're on thinkglink.com, I want you to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. It's on every single page of the website, so that's not hard to miss. And you should follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, where we are always having really interesting conversations. But really, what I want you to do is take advantage of all of the Think Glink community content that we're publishing for the Equifax Finance blog. I mean, great stories right now about taxes and what you need to do to make sure you're not overpaying on your taxes this year. There have been so many changes, all kinds of stuff going on. So we want to make sure you're protecting your identity, that you've got your tax stuff. In fact, we're going to be doing a whole bunch of videos on identity theft that we'll be releasing probably around in about another week or so, a little bit after April 1st. And I'll be pushing all of those out on Twitter. So if you follow me on Twitter, you're going to be getting those. But you can also just sign up for the free weekly newsletter. And twice a week, it's going to be delivered into your inbox with links to all of our best community information. All free, that you need to know to protect yourself. So I want you to do that. Follow me on Twitter. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Big changes are coming this year to thinklink.com, and I want you to be a part of it. Because if you're going to rebuild your own house, you're going to need some help, and that's what we're here for. 404-872-0750 is our number. Lots of calls. I want to make sure that we are getting to as many as we can this hour, so we're helping you directly. Richard joins us on the line all the way from Missouri. Hey, Richard, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
I'm glad to talk to you.
I'm glad to have you on the line. What can I do to help you today, sir?
Well, I know absolutely nothing about stocks and everything.
Well, that's a good place to start.
I'm retired as of about 2 years ago.
All right.
I have a 401k with the company I was working for. It's a hospital. I can't put anything into it.
Because you don't work there anymore.
Right. What is the best move for my money?
Well, are you happy or unhappy with the growth you've had over the last 2 years?
Well, couple of years, it's really done good.
Of course, because the stock market's at an all-time high.
I did absolutely nothing back when all this started. And the other guys in the shop went to the one where it's dollar for dollar.
Yeah.
And I grew. I made money.
Well, good for you. So why do you want to change it?
Well, it's kind of slowed down, but I can't put any more in.
That's right, because you've retired.
Yeah, but I don't have any.
Do you have extra? Wait a second. So are you saying you have extra money, or are you still working doing a different job? How's that working for you?
No, my wife's working.
Mm-hmm.
And with my Social Security and my pension, we pay for all of our bills.
You have extra money is what you're telling me.
Yeah, her check goes straight into savings.
So you should have a Roth IRA.
Right.
Do you have one?
No.
Why not?
I don't know, because I don't know anything about them.
Oh, Richard, you got to help yourself before I can help you. So
Why don't they teach this stuff somewhere?
Follow me online. Get my newsletter. We talk about it all the time. There are really good books out there. But let me give you a shortcut.
Okay.
Your wife's still working. She's earning income. That means that she, unless she earns, the two of you together are more than $167,000 a year or $172,000 a year, which I doubt.
No, we don't.
Okay. You're entitled to have a Roth IRA. She gets one because she's working, and you get one because it's a spousal IRA. Spousal Roth IRA. That means together you guys can put away like, I don't know, $12,000 a year. Six for each of you. And you can put it into any account that you like. I mean, you can open up one at Fidelity. Where is your 401k?
Vanguard.
Vanguard, perfect.
Well,
open up a Roth IRA with Vanguard.
I don't understand about the Roth IRA. Are they investing that in stock?
It's not that they're investing it. You get to choose. So it's after-tax money.
Yeah.
You get to put it away, and then it grows tax-free forever.
Right.
So it's awesome. But you get to decide what to invest it in. So you open it up in Vanguard, and if you want to put it into a Vanguard Total Stock Fund, or if you want to put it into a Vanguard S&P 500 Index Fund or a Vanguard Total Bond Fund, all of those are good choices. Just open it up, start plowing in the money, and then you get to decide where it goes.
Okay.
In fact, if you hurry up, you can even open one up for last year.
Yeah, no, I was going to do that on my taxes, but I decided not to.
Well, this is how you.
About it.
Well, this is how you put more money away. Do you have access to the internet?
Yeah.
Okay, so what you need to do is go online. And you can go to the IRS website, and you can look up individual retirement accounts or IRAs, right? And it'll talk about Roth IRAs. So that's how you start to educate yourself.
Isn't
you
there two different types of IRAs?
Yes. Roth IRAs are what happens after tax, right?
Right.
And regular IRAs are what happens pre-tax.
That's the traditional.
That's your 401k. It's a qualified retirement account.
Okay, so I could transfer my 401k into one of those.
You can. You can roll it over. And then you can decide where to invest it.
But I still have to pay taxes sometime on that money.
Yeah, when you take that money out, you have to pay tax on it. If you want to put more money away, right now you qualify for a Roth IRA. And if you go to if you just go into a Google search engine and you type in Roth IRA IRS, it'll pull up a page on Roth IRAs, and it explains what you can do, right? You cannot deduct contributions to a Roth IRA, but the qualified distributions are tax-free, and you can make contributions to your Roth IRA after you reach 70 and a half, right? And while you're working, you can leave amounts in your Roth IRA as long as you live. You have to designate it as a Roth IRA when you open it up. It tells you your contribution limits for the year and how to set it up. And the differences between a Roth IRA and other kinds of IRAs.
Okay.
So those are all really helpful things to know.
Also, the people at Vanguard should be able to help me.
The people at Vanguard should too. But even though they're terrific folks over there at Vanguard, you want to know some stuff before you call them, right? So
yeah.
That you know if you're getting a really smart person or somebody who isn't as well trained.
All righty.
If you don't know anything and you call Vanguard or Fidelity or Charles Schwab, you might get somebody really smart and good, and you might not. Right? That's just how customer service training goes. Not everybody's perfect. But if you know something, right, you can say to them, really? I thought that wasn't quite how it worked.
Right.
So I want you to educate yourself. And if you have access to the internet, you can go online to the IRS and start reading about it from the source, right? Because IRAs are from the IRS.
Okay.
That's how it's designated. You can also go to Vanguard's website, and I would read about it before you actually invest in it.
Right.
So there are places to go. There's a personal investor's website, and you can read about Roth IRAs, regular IRAs, investing, all kinds of stuff.
And if we stay with Vanguard and start one, my wife would have to be the one starting it?
Yes, your wife would have to start open it up for the two of you, for you, and then you get to open up a spousal IRA.
Okay.
And then you get to, you get to plow all this money in. So if you have extra money, this is a great place to start.
Yeah, it's not really extra. She finds a way to spend it.
Now, all right, well, now you're changing your story.
Yeah, well, it's extra money. She's still earning my last daughter at home go on a all-expensive paid vacation every year with each other and, all-inclusive type thing.
All right. Well, she's earning money. She gets to spend it a little bit, right?
That's the way she says it.
Right? I mean, you don't get to decide all the time.
Right.
Yeah. How many years have you been married?
35.
Then you have been married long enough to know.
And she is wonderful. I don't know where I'd be without her.
Well, there you go. So the real question is, what do the two of you want to do with this extra money? And if she wants to spend some of it and she's earning it, she gets to decide that as long as you've got all your expenses paid. But
I'm going to let you go so you can get some other dumb customer like me.
No. Listen, you go and talk to her and have a conversation about how you guys want to go forward. And then talk to her about the Roth IRA and see if she's interested. And even if she's not, you can open up a spousal IRA because she's working. So maybe you don't put in $12,000, you put in $6,000. But I think that you've got on your mind that you want to move something with your IRA or your 401k into an IRA and do some different kinds of investing. And I think you should talk to people at Vanguard and do some reading on your own so that you figure out what it is you want to do. And you can call back next week and we'll talk some more. 404-872-0750. Carrie joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call, first of all.
Sure.
My husband and I are selling our what has been our first home that we've ever bought together. And we're just not really sure what to expect in terms of service from our realtor and what the process should be like. And I think we're kind of having some concerns that maybe we're not, like, our house isn't being marketed correctly, or we're not sure if we're being difficult here, or...
Oh, I'm sure you're being very difficult. Difficult and demanding. So I wrote a book called 100 Questions Every Home Seller Should Ask that I think is... maybe out of print, I don't know. But you can probably find a used copy on Amazon. And that book really walks you through the process and what the expectations are. And even though that book isn't really in print anymore, I think it's still basically valid. Because it talks about process, which is very important. With your real estate agent, how did you choose that agent?
He's a neighbor and sort of a friend. And then we have other friends that have also used him.
Did you ever interview anybody else?
We not directly know. I mean, the person that sold us the house, we knew we didn't want to use him because we had a really bad experience with that. And then we had spoken with someone. We had thought about we were going to rent the house out at first, so we spoke with someone who was a realtor and also a property management agent, and kind of decided to not rent. But
let me jump in and say you had a bad experience when you bought. You're not having a good experience when you sell. So I can understand having one bad experience, but not two. And that means that you're not, I think, it's not that you're bad clients. I think you and your husband maybe don't understand the process well enough. And you don't understand how to pick the right people for you.
Okay.
So you're already in this relationship, and you have a friend, and now you just have to make it work. And I want to find out a little bit more about what's going on, but we have to take a quick break, and then we have to do our prize pack for the week. Do you want to hang on for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Glenk. We're going to come back and talk to Carrie just a little bit to see a little bit more about her expectations. We're going to do a prize pack, and we're going to answer more of your questions on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com at midday every Sunday with Elise Glenk on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
It's 12:25, News Talk WSB. We've got a prize pack, WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack of $402. It includes a pair of tickets to Theater of the Stars presentation, Mary Poppins. Always a great show. April 2nd to the 7th at the Fox Theater. A pair of tickets to the Alliance Theater's presentation of Zorro. April 3rd through May 5th at the Alliance Stage. And a maintenance agreement for two complete HVAC tune-ups, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller. Be nice to Fred. He's taking your call at 404-741-0750. Good luck to you. We were talking to Carrie, and Carrie has had a bad experience when she bought her house, and now she's sort of not having a great experience selling her house, and she wanted to know if it's her expectations that are maybe a little out of whack. So, Carrie, here's what I'm thinking. When you are selling your property, the first thing that you have to understand is what's going on in your neighborhood. And that requires you to do some work to think about how many foreclosures are there, how many things have been selling. And when you hire a friend, I think the expectation is that that friend is going to do more for you because they're your friend. And really what they might be thinking is, it's not that I don't want to do the most, it's just I don't have to impress that person because they're my friend. So you guys are approaching the whole friend thing from the opposite expectation-wise. And your expectations are he's going to do more. His expectation is he could do a little less because, you know, he's trying to give this kind of service to everybody else. What I think you need to do is sit down with your friend and say, are we totally mismatched and are we putting our friendship at risk? Because my friendship with you, our friendship with you, is the most important thing that I have. And I don't want to put that at risk, but here's how we're feeling about this situation. And please help us because we've never sold before. We need your expertise and understanding why we have these mismatched expectations. And then you should be quiet and listen to him discuss the process. And if he's really good at what he does, you're going to understand what it is your expectations are mismatched, why they're in the wrong place. If he's not good at it, you're not going to understand. Then ask questions respectfully about the process. Ask him to lay it out for you, and then say you're going to give it another couple of weeks to see if it feels better. And if it doesn't, then what you're going to do is you guys are going to call time out to it, because you're going to do it to preserve the friendship. And if you put it all on the friendship, he can't get mad at you. And trust me, if he hasn't sold your place in another month, he's going to be just really glad to walk away as well. And this gives you both a face-saving out. All right? Let me know how it goes. And go buy a copy of my book, even a used, old, out of the 100 questions every home seller should ask. I think it's going to help. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Klink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 12:37, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Kling. Thanks for joining me today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to go online, sign up for my free weekly newsletter, follow me on Twitter. It is a hoot, for sure. All right, Barry joins us on the line from Marietta. Hey, Barry, how can I help you rebuild your life today?
Well, it's not that extreme, Elise, but thank you.
All right, good.
You have a great show, and your info has always been right on the money, so I'm listening to you a lot and thought I'd ask you a question about refinancing.
Go right ahead.
Okay, so we have a conventional 30-year fixed. The house is valued at about $200K, according to Zillow, which is about the same as what we bought it, so it dropped and recovered some of it. We have about $65,000 equity, but we do have an outstanding home equity loan of about $20,000. I also did a HARP refi about 3 years ago to lower the interest rate, and I'm looking to sort of do that again. What are my options? Because I understand I can't do a HARP a second time, correct?
Well, if you have equity, you don't need HARP.
Okay.
I mean, a HARP is really for people who are underwater or have zero equity. But if you've got 20% in equity, which is what it kind of sounds like, or 15%, you ought to be able to do some sort of conventional refinance. So have
okay,
you talked
so
to any...
I went back to my mortgage holder bank, and they wouldn't without, you know, exorbitant fees and...
Oh, you have to pay for the refinance.
Yeah, I understand.
Nobody's giving you a free one this time.
Some of the online places, you know, seem to be offering, you know, terrific options.
Well, what's the interest rate you have right now?
5.25%.
Okay. You can do a lot better than that.
Right. And I'd like to see if I can knock 15 years off of it. And
So here's what you might be, if you could get to 20% equity, and I don't know if you can, I mean, you might have to put some cash in, but if you could get to 20% equity and you're refinancing maybe only $150,000, let's just say.
Okay.
Or maybe $160,000. So you ought to be able in a 15-year to get to 3.25% or less. So you're dropping 2% off, and I would guess that your payment is going to be almost the same or even less than what you're paying now.
That's what I figured.
And you've just knocked 15 years off. So when I talk about a home run refinance, lower the interest rate, lower your monthly payment, shorten the loan term, manage the closing costs. Now, in your case, your payments might be the same. I think they're going to still be a little bit less. But it won't be like you're saving $300-$400 a month because you're dropping 15 years off this loan.
Right. And I'm not interested necessarily in reducing the monthly payment, just shortening the time on it because we're not getting any younger. And
really? I was hoping you had the answer to that.
I wish I did. Mm. And but like I said, I got... so it would be worthwhile to pay for... an appraisal and all the fees that are necessary in order to do this as a conventional.
Yeah, I mean, I would shop it around because when you get the lenders competing against each other is when you're going to get a better deal. And you have to educate yourself on what that deal really should be. right? So
okay.
If you can educate yourself on what it should be, then when they tell you, oh, no, I'm sorry, it's going to cost you $10,000, you can say, yeah, really, lender A, B, and D say that they can do it for $4,000. Is that your best offer? But unless you really know what those other lenders are going to say, then you can't say that with
okay.
any sort of authority whatsoever. And really, this is a game about authority.
And closing costs should run like somewhere around $3,000 or $4,000, and I could roll that into the new loan amount?
I think it's perfectly acceptable to pay 1-2% in closing costs and fees.
1-2% of the loan amount.
Right. So if it's $150,000, $160,000, I think you could probably, and I'm not talking about prepaid interest, because that's
right.
controllable when you close on the loan. Last day of the month, first day of the month, right?
Mm-hmm.
So taking that off the table, but you will have to have some of the other costs and fees, and it's just going to add up. And I think 1-2% is pretty reasonable. But you
okay.
have to figure out what, and you could always trade a slightly higher interest rate, say 3.5%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Versus 2.75%, let's say, with more fees. So you can control some of that. But again, you have to ask a lot of questions and figure out what's going to be the best place for you. And once you figure that out and you've got the understanding, then you can go and talk to 2 or 3 or 4 other lenders, figure out who's offering you the best deal. Because while you think your own lender really wants to keep you, they don't really always. And so you have to shop it around to understand who wants your business. I think a lot of times borrowers don't understand that lenders do play games. They don't always want a lot of business, and that has to do for reasons that have nothing to do with you. So by talking to a bunch of lenders and shopping around, you'll find that in any given week, somebody's going to want your business more than others, and that's who you want to go with because that's where you're going to get the best deal. Make sure you find out all the details. Ask as many questions as you need to feel really confident of what they're talking about, and then zoom in and make your best deal. 404-872-0750. Michelle joins us on the line. Hi, Michelle.
Hello, Elise. How are you doing today?
I'm good. What can I do for you?
Oh, well, I have a question. I have been with a financial firm for about 15 years now. I have quite a bit of money with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not only charged for the actual stock trading itself, but also they do quarterly advisor fees. And the advisor fees add up to about $6,000 a year or so.
How much money do you have with them?
About $500,000.
Okay. So.
And they do all the work. They look at the stocks and look at the mutual funds. But I just don't know if I'm with the right company. Is there like a formula that maybe your funds should be increasing every year, at least maybe 2% or something like that?
Are you making money or losing money?
Making money, but not
how much money are you making?
Well, that's a good question. I would say about $10,000 a year.
$10,000 a year is 2%.
Yes.
So the stock market over the last 4 or 5 years,
mm-hmm.
4 years since 2009, has doubled. Has your money doubled?
No.
No. Did you take a hit and then it came back?
Well, I had to take some money out for divorce lawyer fees.
Okay.
But it's definitely, like I would say, remained pretty steady over the last five, six years or so.
Okay. So when the market crashed in 2009, did you lose money?
I did, yes.
Okay. And have you regained all of it?
No. No, I haven't.
So
not all of it.
The real question is, why haven't you had this conversation with your so-called advisor, who you're paying $6,000 a year to? Because if you're making $10,000 and you're paying them for the trading and you're paying them $6,000 a year, you're making nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My question would be, on a face-to-face meeting, you charge me a lot of money. What are you doing for me?
Right. Sure.
And if you aren't up to having that conversation, then you should get a lawyer to go with you,
mm-hmm.
or somebody to sit next to you to give you all the energy and the confidence that you need to demand accountability for your money. Because
mm-hmm.
I'd be pretty mad. Aren't you mad?
Yes, I also blame myself because I feel like I'm not doing I'm not educating myself on stocks or mutual funds, but I think that's what I pay you for. That's what why you should be investigating certain stocks and mutual funds.
So let me tell you what my... This was something that I learned when I wrote my book, 100 Questions You Should Ask About Your Personal Finances.
Mm-hmm.
I must have talked to a couple dozen really top financial people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them said to me one day, Elise, how hard do you work for your money? And I said, mm-hmm. I work really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, look in the mirror. Who in your life, professional or otherwise, cares as much about your money as you do?
Mm-hmm.
Who sweats for it? Who borrows for it?
Mm-hmm.
Who thinks about it? Who stays up at night worrying about it? Who cares about your money as much as you do? And I said, well, I've got the stockbroker and this and that. And he said, nobody cares about your money as much as you do. And so you have to learn enough to keep everybody honest.
That's a good point. Yes. I don't think they're losing any sleep if my funds aren't increasing.
No, they're not, because you keep
right.
paying them every year.
Sure.
So
I need to sit down with them. Unfortunately, they're out of state, so I will be scheduled sometime in the spring to meet with them and really get the numbers and see percentage-wise how much my funds are being increased and are we in the right company. Maybe I'll even take somebody more educated than myself, like another third party.
Well, let me tell you something else.
Yeah.
One of the smartest guys I know is a guy named Dan Solon, who I've had on the show before, and Dan is really smart. Dan's written a whole bunch of books called The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read and The Smartest This, The Smartest That, right? And he's really,
uh-huh.
really smart. And Dan says there's really only three index funds that you need to invest in to be fully diversified and fully invested.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The first one is a stock, general stock mutual fund that invests in the total market. The second
okay.
one is a total bond fund.
Okay.
And the third one is an international stock fund.
Okay.
And then you have to decide how much risk you want to take.
Mm-hmm.
So most people are like 50-50 or 60-40 stocks to bonds. And then that's how you invest your money.
Okay.
So with that, what you're doing is meeting the market. You balance the bonds against the stocks, and you understand what the risk is and what will allow you to sleep at night.
Sure.
Now, if you want somebody like Dan to manage your money, he will. He'll charge you for it.
Mm.
But what he does is he puts you into a little bit more specific fund than what you have, what I've just given you. What I've given you is what he basically invests
mm-hmm.
people in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's free, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Vanguard and you invest in index mutual funds, those three funds or Fidelity, it'll
uh-huh.
cost you 0.1%.
Oh, okay. Not bad.
Not bad. And okay. definitely not what you're paying.
Well, it sounds like you have a lot of confidence in Dan.
I do, but read his book, right?
Yeah. Okay.
What I'm getting at is, and what his point is, what this really smart guy told me years ago, nobody cares as much about it as you do, or as you should. So
yes.
I want you to read a really simple book or two.
Okay.
And I want you to educate yourself enough so that when you go into this meeting, you feel confident and armed with enough knowledge to ask smart questions. Because you sound like a really smart person to me.
Yes. Thank you.
And so you can do this.
Sure. Definitely. Well, that's going to be on my agenda this week, to schedule an appointment with him.
I think yeah. that's a very good thing to do, and I want you to read one of Dan's books. They used to sell them at Costco, so you can know how popular they are, right?
Oh, sure.
If
yeah.
you just Google Dan Solon, S-O-L-I-N,
mm-hmm.
his website will come up. It's called like Smartest Investor or SmartestBookYou'llEverRead.com or
okay.
something like that. And just order his book and flip through it. It's not very complicated. It's not very long. You could even download it to an iPad, right? You could just get it this afternoon.
Okay.
And flip through it, and I want you to email me and let me know if you have any questions whatsoever. You can email me at questions@thinklink.com.
Okay.
But I think that you're smart enough to be able to take it and get rid of these people who are charging you money and not delivering value.
Mm-hmm.
and care enough about it to either do it yourself in a very simple way and achieve the same or better results that you're paying for.
Right. Sure.
Or find somebody who can do this for you in a way that's going to make sense. Because when you abdicate responsibility, it's easy to assign blame. But I think it's all about not having enough confidence to do it yourself. And my feeling is if you've been able to amass $500,000 in an after-tax account, you're smart enough to manage that money and grow it forward. And the sense of accomplishment and confidence that that is going to bring you, knowing that you're self-sufficient and that you can move forward with your financial life, is going to pay huge dividends and rewards to you down the line. All right? You've got your homework, Michelle. Let me know what's going to happen. 52 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. 57 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. So glad to have had a chance to talk to you a little bit today and help you with your own rebuilding issues, whatever it is. Rebuilding your house, rebuilding your financial life, questions that will make a difference. So, if I didn't get to your question today on the show, and I know there are a whole bunch of people that were holding, and I'm so sorry about it, we just keep running out of time. I feel like we could just make the show stretch out another couple of hours, and then we would get to everybody, but then more people call. So, here's the thing. You can always email me at questions@thinklink.com. Questions@thinklink.com. And from there, we answer questions that appear on thinklink.com, but we also put it into our syndicated column that Sam and I write together. Goes to about 85 newspapers around the country. We tweet out at Glink. We'll tweet your answers, and we'll converse back and forth with you. Shelby is the one who's usually monitoring that, but we have all kinds of people on staff who take a look at it, and I do as well, and I was on it today chatting about this. So there are lots of ways to interact with me and with the ThinkLink team, and we want to hear from you. Don't forget, you can always listen to the show online. You can download it from iTunes or at thinklink.com/audio. Lots and lots of ways. Don't forget to go to the Equifax Finance blog where you can read my real estate column and some great tax information, all kinds of stuff about identity theft, all there at blog.equifax.com. And then over at moneywatch.com, where there's even more stuff going on this week. We actually have a funny story about March Madness up at Money Watch. So, all that and more. Have a great week. Again, happy Passover to those of you who celebrate, and Easter for those who celebrate. And if you don't, just have a great week. And I'll talk to you again next week. Take care, everybody.